In an election year, churches can do a whole lot more than we think in political matters. Find out more next on Gospel of Life. Hello, I'm Father Frank Pavone, Director of Gospel of Life Ministries. Welcome to our program. We're joined, as usual, by our Associate Director, Janet Morana. Janet, you've heard the question many times. People ask us as we travel the country, well, how do some of these churches get away with having candidates in their pulpit? And my pastor does not even want to mention that it's election day.
Right.
Where's the discrepancy coming from? And of course, as you know, the reason is there's an awful lot of confusion out there about what churches can and cannot do in election years.
I know. You know, the problem is here, there's a big fear that the IRS is like this monster just waiting to swoop down and grab the church's tax-exempt status.
Ridiculous.
It's ridiculous.
Simply not the case.
Right, but that's how it's presented.
Yes, well, many feel that way.
Yeah.
Many are made to feel that way by the kind of advice that they're getting. But you know that bumper sticker, I break for animals, and then some people started to make a joke out of that, and they made one that says, I break for hallucinations.
Right.
A lot of our pastors are breaking for hallucinations,
that's
literally.
Right.
I mean, they think of the IRS in this way. The IRS is not eagerly waiting for the next church that it can swoop down upon to take away their tax exemption. That's simply not the case.
But, you know, the sad thing is, though, that fear really stops so many pastors from even preaching about a simple thing like registering to vote. I mean, they just think they have to just skip over the whole subject of elections altogether.
Well, you know, there's a lot of fear about getting in trouble with the IRS. I think there ought to be a little bit more fear in the churches about getting in trouble with God.
Right.
Because God gives us a command to change the world, to proclaim the gospel, to activate people to get involved in changing the world. And if we fail to carry out his command, aren't we going to be in trouble with him? Mm-hmm. Isn't that more important to worry about?
Well, you know, I know one of the things we've done to kind of combat the fear is, Father, you called together a legal symposium.
Yes.
You were one of the participants, and I believe you had several legal experts.
I did.
And they presented papers at the Ave Maria School of Law, and each legal expert got up and gave their opinion, and we put this symposium into a booklet form where people could really read what these legal experts say exactly on this issue.
And we're going to hear from one of those legal experts in a few moments. I'm going to introduce who he is and let him speak. But let's first of all back up a little bit and look at what is the issue that we are dealing with. The issue that we are dealing with has to do with the tax laws of the United States of America. And churches, as well as certain organizations that are tax exempt, are under that arrangement with the government on certain conditions. Of course, they have to be doing legal activity in the first place. Tax-exempt organizations are defined in various ways, but what we're talking about here, churches and then 501c3 tax-exempt organizations, there's a distinction between the two. But basically, looking at them together, what we're saying is that one of the things the government requires is that in order to maintain that status, they not intervene in a political campaign, either participate in or intervene in, directly or indirectly, a campaign in favor of or in opposition to a specific candidate. Now, of course, the question becomes, what does it mean to intervene in a campaign? And the question of what that means is what is often disputed. Now, why is it disputed? Is the law not clear? Well, we're under a couple of different types of law and guidelines. It's the Federal Election Commission. And the Supreme Court has actually drawn what we call a bright line test for that. And in one of its decisions, Buckley versus Valeo, it said very clearly that you advocate for or against the candidate when you use very specific words like vote for, elect, or defeat. So if I get into the pulpit and I say, brothers and sisters, we have election day coming up. I am urging you today to vote for John Smith for your state senator. Have I intervened in that political campaign? Of course I have.
Right,
I have explicitly named endorsed, told the people to vote for that person. Federal Election Commission laws and the Supreme Court have clearly said there's a bright line there, and it's defined because you used those specific words and you identified that specific candidate. But we also have the IRS, and we have the Internal Revenue Code. And what confuses a lot of people about that code, which also talks about churches and other tax-exempt organizations not intervening in political campaigns, what's confusing there is that they say, well, we're not going to give you a bright line test. We're not going to tell you exactly the words that you should or shouldn't use. We're going to judge whether you've intervened in the campaign or not by looking at all the facts and circumstances. Well, the problem with that is, who determines when you've looked at enough facts and circumstances? How long are you going to investigate this? You could end up examining it and asking questions forever and ever and never come to any conclusion. Furthermore, as a pastor, as a minister of the gospel, I want to know from the government, if you're drawing a line that you're saying I can't cross, it would be nice to know where that line is. I want to know when I'm going to give a sermon of the things if I'm crossing the line, I want to know that like ahead of time instead of 6 months later after somebody complained and then they did an endless investigation of facts and circumstances. And then they told me later that I crossed the line that I didn't intend to cross. That doesn't seem to be fair. Fortunately, we do have a lot of good expert legal guidance. And as you said before, the symposium that we put together, and it was called the Church and Politics, Are We As Restricted As We Think? The answer, of course, being no, we're not. These experts give us some helpful guidance as to what these so-called facts and circumstances would be.
That's right. Well, one of those experts was a lawyer by the name of Jim Bopp. He's highly regarded in this field of tax law.
Oh, he sure is.
And matter of fact, he is an advisor to some key ministries like Dr. Dobson's Focus on the Family, National Right to Life, mm-hmm. and our Gospel of Life ministry, ourselves.
Priests for Life, yeah.
And, you know, so far, any of the ministries, you know, he's assisted has not had any problems. As a matter of fact, I don't think there is any church that has had their tax-exempt status removed, you know, that there's such this fear.
Well, not for the reasons that many pastors fear that it will be. And Jim is going to talk about that in this clip. Let's listen to Jim Bopp for a few moments. He is, again, one of the nation's leading experts in this area of the law. Let's listen to the guidance that Jim has to offer us.
Churches have an important role in talking about moral issues as they impact our society. And pastors and priests have a special role to speak out on moral issues, even if those moral issues, as they often are issues that the government deals with. No church has ever lost its tax-exempt status for speaking out on moral issues, even when those moral issues are issues in a concurrent campaign for the election of candidates. The only three circumstances in which churches have ever lost their tax-exempt status is when they have expressly advocated the election or defeat of a candidate for office. Two, when they have given church resources, money, lists, things like that, to a candidate, so they made a contribution to a candidate, or when they've allowed church property to be used to essentially pass the hat for a candidate's election coffers. Those are the only times. Now, that doesn't mean that the IRS hasn't been engaged in some overreaching, as far as I am concerned, where they have been threatening or raising concerns or issuing warnings about what is, I believe, to be legitimate activity of churches to talk about moral issues, to talk about those moral issues in the context of public officials or candidates. As long as the church is not expressly advocating the election or defeat of a candidate. The IRS has put out some advice, and one of the factors that they look at, and I think it's a key factor, is whether or not you've mentioned any candidates. So if you don't mention any candidates, you are simply talking about an issue, or a moral issue in this case, abortion, and the responsibility, the civic responsibility that people have in conducting themselves as citizens in the voting booth. And you know, that's the kind of thing that has always been done by a wide variety of non-profit organizations that is talking about civic responsibility issues or moral issues. So I don't see any problem at all with a pastor or a priest talking about an issue. A church can only be held responsible for their own activities. That is, when an agent of the church engages in a certain activity, or the church resources are used for a particular activity. So if some member of a Right to Life group comes onto the church parking lot and distributes a literature, that's not the church doing it. That's some third party, and they are responsible for what they do. So there's no requirement that, or there's no liability of the church for some third party's distribution of literature. And furthermore, there's no requirement that you have to, you know, put up a fence, put a minefield, you know, armed guards, and keep people off your premises. If you choose not to engage in, you know, that sort of security, well, that's your option. And really, nothing has changed about that over the last few years.
Well, we're very grateful to Jim Bob. There's a lot of other things that Jim says, and you can contact us for more material. In fact, we've set up a special website called politicalresponsibility.org. And at the front page of that website, you will see where you can go as a pastor or minister of a church, where you can get free legal advice in regard to specific things that you may want to do or know whether you can do. Go to politicalresponsibility.org. We have that guidance. We're going to talk with Janet a little more about some of the specifics that Jim has talked to us about after we take this break. Please stay with us.
There's nothing wrong with your television set. You don't see anything because there's nothing there. Abortion, the most common surgery in America. Why don't we ever see what it looks like? A message from Priests for Life.
Now you can make a difference in the lives of the unborn for as little as $12. Make your donation today and we'll send you a copy of the pro-life masterpiece, Earth's Trash, Heaven's Treasure. Vivid imagery and striking colors come together in a painting that captures the essence of eternal hope for the unborn. You'll help change the hearts and lives of people everywhere. Plus, you'll have a treasured piece of artwork that serves as a daily reminder of the beauty of precious living souls. Make your donation today.
Welcome back. We are talking about what churches can and cannot do when it comes to political intervention and elections. And, of course, Janet, as Jim made clear, churches can always talk about issues. That's what you call issue advocacy. Candidate advocacy, however, is something different, and that's what the church does not do and may not do under the law. That is, as we said before, stand up and say vote for John Smith or vote against John Smith, or to do it indirectly. The church is not supposed to do that. In other words, we shouldn't be using clever ways of getting around it. Like, for example, I remember somebody joking about when President Bush was running for president, the pastor getting up and saying, well, I'm not going to tell you who to vote for, but let me just say this. When God called Moses, he appeared to him in a burning bush. Now, Dana, that's like a clever little, you know, funny little trick. The IRS is not going to let you get away with that either. You know, you're not supposed to. We're not playing games here. The point is, you don't intervene with candidate advocacy one way or another. But talking about the issues, that's a different story. I mean, can I get up into the pulpit and say, brothers and sisters, we have the obligation to vote. And when we vote, we have the obligation to advance the culture of life, because the first purpose of government is to defend life. And therefore, we need to have candidates in office who are going to protect human life. Can I say that? I have to say that. Of course I can say that. Otherwise, I'm not preaching the gospel.
Well, you know, Father, I think the key question that comes to pass is really is voter guidance. So many people come to a pastor and say, you know, gee, I have this voter guide, and would you give this out at church, you know, the Sunday before the election? And I think that's where pastors get the most nervous. So what can you say about voter guides?
Well, the IRS makes it very clear. And by the way, let's point out here that these questions and more than we have time to deal with on this show, are addressed, including in specific examples, in various IRS documents. We have links to those documents on our politicalresponsibility.org website. So we really want to encourage people as they listen to us today to then to take step two, go to that website and read those documents. Here's what the IRS said. A church can educate its people about the positions of the candidates on the issues. But in doing so, it needs to have its voter education material neutral and non-biased. Now, here's what they mean by that. If I make a flyer and I say, well, here are the candidates for president of the United States, here are the positions that they hold on various issues, and the guide does have to cover a multiplicity of issues, doesn't define how many, but a range of issues that are of concern to the electorate. And then as I go down the list, let's say I put a red check mark on the voter guide next to the position that we as a church consider to be the better position. That is not the kind of voter guide that the IRS considers the church able to distribute, because they're not just telling the people the positions of the candidates. They're directing the people in the direction of one or of the candidates. And that's where the IRS draws the line. It says, no, you can educate your people on the position of the candidates as long as the educational material is only educational and not advocacy, not telling the people that they should prefer one or the other. And that's the basic rule.
I think this time around in the presidential election, we're going to have an easier time because for the first time, I think we have people who have voting records on both competing against each other. Well, so it would be pretty easy now to just take certain bills that these people have voted on commonly, different issues, different bills. We could have some pro-life bills and some other bills, and then that's an easy way to compare. Here's their voting record.
Here's the voting record. Voting records are public information, and the churches certainly are allowed to publish voting records of people who, candidates who already hold public office and have voted on various legislation.
So, for example, the partial birth abortion ban. Now, all these candidates voted one way or the other. So there's something you could lay out there on your voter's guide and so forth and so on. You could go back and look at several bills. And there's organizations actually that have this all laid out, their voting record. And that would be very safe to put out there so that people could take it for themselves and compare the candidates.
And on our politicalresponsibility.org, we have we have the sources there for the voting records. Well, voter registration, nonpartisan. Get out the vote drives, again, nonpartisan. Voter guides, as we said, nonpartisan. These are just some of the things the church can do. And thanks, Janet, for helping us to navigate these waters, as important as they are. And brothers and sisters, we want to urge you again, be as active as you can in your church and outside your church. Because remember, although the church is limited in the things that she can do, although not as limited as most of us think, you are not limited as a private citizen or in the various committees and organizations that you might want to form to promote the best candidate. So please be active and now stay with us for our action spot.
There is a crisis in America, a Holocaust that takes the lives of more than 3,000 children every day through the horrific act of abortion. Yet despite this tragic loss, we are gaining victory over this culture of death. In the last 12 years, half of the nation's freestanding abortion clinics have closed, and the abortion industry is on the run. Gospel of Life Ministries has played a vital role in the rescue of countless children and is currently in place to save thousands more. But we urgently need your support to make this happen. Not everyone can be on the front line of this battle, but when you support Gospel of Life, you are saving lives. Your life-saving gift of $25, $50, or $100 will help us provide alternatives to women who think they have no choice but abortion. And for those countless women who have lost children to abortion, Gospel of Life Ministries will help them find forgiveness, healing, and peace in the cross of Christ and become outspoken advocates for the lives of their unborn children. The help you provide will also bring the saving word of life to churches through a training program that is raising a mass voice that will see abortion stopped. With your gift of $25, we'll send you the booklet, Pro-Life, Today and Always. It will give you an overview of why we are pro-life and provide reflections that will stir and motivate you to action. With your gift of $50, we'll also send you the DVD, The Procedure. In this powerful DVD, you'll hear abortionists discuss the procedure in their own words and unmask the violence that the abortion industry tries to hide. And when you give a gift of $100, we'll also include the book, Forbidden Grief. This compelling book will open your eyes to the psychological damage done to those who have had an abortion experience. Please call, write, or make your gift online today.
Welcome to our action segment. Janet, many of our viewers are familiar with the Silent No More Awareness Campaign, which gives voice to the men and the women who have suffered the loss of a child from abortion and have experienced the healing of Christ. But this campaign is in need of helpers on the local level, and that's what we want to talk about giving people a chance to do today.
That's right, because we're gathering the army of men and women who have been healed from abortion. But now we need the people who can provide the platform for them in their home community, someone who is willing to be what we call a regional coordinator.
Now, this does not have to be somebody who has been through an abortion, right?
No, it does not.
And it can be a man or a woman?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes, it can. Matter of fact, Mike Stack is one of our regional coordinators in Detroit, Michigan, okay. And he's not opposed to Board of Dad, but he's good at organizing events. He was already active in some other church activities, and he said, well, I think I can have one or two events a year and bring these voices to our community. He's been doing it quite successfully. So that's what we're looking for, people who are willing to help organize an event, a gathering, where the men or women in their community, who we will give them the names of the people, who are been healed and ready to speak, and schedule an event. And it's a very simple event. Sometimes people tack it on to an event they're having already. So, for example, maybe you're having a rally and you have a series of speakers. Well, at the end of that, the Silent No More Awareness Campaign can do a gathering where they will hold those signs, I regret my abortion, I regret lost fatherhood, and then present their testimonies in public. And this has a very dramatic effect. I mean, it helps, first of all, people who are listening. Maybe they know someone has had an abortion and they don't realize about the healing and the resources. Mm-hmm. It also helps people, the girls who are considering an abortion, to stop and rethink that.
Well, what would the regional coordinator actually have to do to get a gathering going? How much is involved?
It's not that much, but the first step is they just need to contact the campaign. If they want, we have a simple little brochure that says be a regional coordinator. We'll mail that to them. They can read that over. And then the next step is contact us, and then we will walk you through the steps. We have a complete binder, a CD of everything from press releases. We basically give you all the tools you need to be a regional coordinator. And we have about 40 regional coordinators now around the country. The sad thing is we don't have enough, really. We have more men and women willing to speak than we have people willing to coordinate activities. Mm. So we do need more regional coordinators. But also to help get the message out, we have some new products. We have a new rally sign. And this was developed for us by our friends at Heritage House. And they can go to our website and get a link to order it. This sign on one side says, a pregnant woman needs support, not abortion. And as we know, that's the whole purpose of the campaign, is to make abortion unthinkable. Come alongside a pregnant woman and give her the assistance she needs. On the other side is a picture from our commercial, the Silent No More commercial, of the women. And it says, we regret our abortion. If you do too, there's help. This is a great double-sided sign, two messages. One woman told me she was going to order the sign and hang it on the door of her bookstore so people coming each way would get this message.
Yes.
Someone else said, well, I'm going to hang it in the nail salon where women come and go quite frequently. So, again, this is a great way of getting the message of the campaign out.
Of course, the campaign also has this new brochure, What's So Bad About Abortion? And it actually gives the answer to that question from the woman's perspective, the various kind of physical, emotional, psychological relationship damage that is done to abortion. Because, of course, the primary evil here is that it kills a baby, but that's also precisely why it hurts the mother.
That's right. And this is all footnoted on the back. So the references are given for every statement in this brochure, and they can contact us at Gospel of Life to get What's So Bad About Abortion.
Yes. Well, thanks very much, Janet, and we encourage all of you, brothers and sisters, go to silentnomoreawareness.org if you want to get directly to the campaign website. Otherwise, as usual, at gospeloflife.com, we have all the relevant links. Now we want to do what we do in every program, and that is to take a few moments to look at abortion. You're going to see some disturbing images, but friends, we have to look at this so that we can be inspired again to take up the cause and to make the sacrifices needed to bring an end to this violence against children. So let's watch and let's pray together for an end to abortion.
You are looking at the face of an unborn child, 25 and a half weeks into pregnancy. This child can be legally killed by abortion in America. As this ad from the Yellow Pages proves, some abortion clinics sell abortions up to 28 weeks. Abortion kills living children whose hearts are beating and whose bodily organs are all in place. Abortion, haven't we gone too far?
There is a crisis in America, a Holocaust that takes the lives of more than 3,000 children every day through the horrific act of abortion. Yet despite this tragic loss, we are gaining victory over this culture of death. With your gift of $25, we'll send you the booklet, Pro-Life, Today and Always. It will give you an overview of why we are pro-life and provide reflections that will stir and motivate you to action. With your gift of $50, we'll also send you the DVD, The Procedure. In this powerful DVD, you'll hear abortionists discuss the procedure in their own words and unmask the violence that the abortion industry tries to hide. And when you give a gift of $100, we'll also include the book, Forbidden Grief. This compelling book will open your eyes to the psychological damage done to those who have had an abortion experience. Please call, write, or make your gift online today. The Gospel of Life program is made possible by the supporters of Gospel of Life Ministries and Priests for Life. Your gift will be used exclusively for the exempt purposes of stopping abortion and providing post-abortion healing. Specific outreaches mentioned are examples of the programs conducted and supported. Gifts are considered to be without use restriction unless specifically stipulated by the donor.